My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
It's not just about watching the game, it's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it, it's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket. Follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
And we welcome you into another edition of our Warriors Weekly podcast for 95.7 The Game. And this week, it's forget Warriors Weekly, it's Warriors Daily. And so we got the Warriors and the Kings. It's the first round of the NBA playoffs. It's the I-80 series. And it's a series that I guess is 38 years in the making. So we're going to be over the next 4 days taking a look at the matchups and talking to some different people. Of course, myself and Matt Steinmetz will have our usual pod on Wednesday. Let's just get it started. We're going to have different guests that cover the Kings. And the first one up is Sean Cunningham from Fox 40 in Sacramento, sports reporter there, regularly covering the Kings on a nightly basis. And so, Sean, just thanks for joining me on the podcast. And yeah, 38 years in the making, right? These two teams never make the playoffs the same year, but the Warriors and Kings finally do it, and they play each other.
JD, so good to see you. Even though I get to see you up in Sacramento on the regular, you get to come up and cover the Kings games. That's how dedicated you are. And it's 38 years in the making, but it, for me and you who cut our teeth in this industry in the same building together as we lads, I mean, it is kind of fun. We've talked about this scenario. Like, God, wouldn't it be cool if the Warriors and the Kings ever square off and not even just a playoff series, in the playoffs at the same time ever? Like, it just never happens. And so, yeah, to be able to have this opportunity and also coincide with the Kings snapping a 16-season playoff drought, might as well do it against a dynasty that's it for your big brothers that are right down in the Bay Area, right?
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned it because, yeah, I worked in Sacramento for 10 years. I've been in the Bay Area now for longer than that, 12. But we both started basically as interns at the same time a long time ago. We don't have to get in. We were very young, by the way. Let's not age ourselves. We were both not even 20 yet at the time in which we were working together as interns. And yeah, we have talked about this scenario. And you know, it's funny. There are years where, I'll just be honest, I would have hated this matchup. There are years where I would have loved this matchup. But it does feel like the timing of it is perfect for it to happen, because the Kings had this wasn't some sneak into the playoffs, 37-45, not really good Kings team that made the play, was 10th, and then they beat a couple teams in this cockamamie play-in tournament and ended up in. And now they're playing the Warriors, who won 65 games and are the clear-cut favorite to win the championship. No, the Kings had a really good year. The Warriors, not so much in the regular season, but they are still the defending champions. And it's crazy because the Kings are the team that had the better year. They have home court advantage, but then they're not really the favorite in the series because the Warriors are the defending champions. And a lot of people think they've been just kind of going through the motions half the year to get to just avoid the play-in. So it's a fun matchup, I think, in that sense, because the Kings are not – the Kings, to me, they're legit for this year. They've done the deal to win 48 games.
No, 100%. And it's funny because, I remember telling you off-air at various times over the past month or so that, like, Yeah, even though it's trending this way and the Warriors have really kind of had a foothold on the sixth seed for various times, and it looks like everything was colliding this way for this Kings and Warriors matchup, I was like, I really don't think it's going to happen just because it hasn't happened. And I just didn't think it was going to, I thought, you know, maybe another team would hop in there. And it didn't, and here we are, Kings and Warriors. And it's funny because I've left the team alone since Sunday. We're gonna talk to them on Wednesday for the first practice, which I imagine is the same with the Warriors. But I remember talking to some Kings players about the Warriors and the potential matchup there just over the past couple weeks. And it's funny, man. They really wanted the Warriors, and they wanted the Warriors because they thought they were the best team, and they thought that beating the Warriors, or even being in a series with the Warriors, would really kind of validate the Kings and what they've done this season under Mike Brown the first time, and getting up to the three seed, as you mentioned. And it's like, you know, getting a win over the Pelicans or the T-Wolves just doesn't have that same gravitas. Maybe the Lakers a little bit if they had gone up to the sixth seed, because there is that kind of natural little rivalry among the fan base. Well, at least the one-sided rivalry with the Kings fans. I don't think the Lakers really consider the Kings rivals from back in the day. But just to have this NorCal rivalry and really be the team that not only takes down a defending champion or has the opportunity to take down a defending champion from last year, but really a dynasty that for the most part has all those pieces remaining from the four titles in nine seasons.
Well, and let's start there, because going back to two games to go in the regular season, the Kings in some ways had a choice, right? It was their home finale. They were playing the Warriors. They were essentially locked into the three seed at that point. It wasn't totally official, but it would become official shortly after tip off of that game, based on what the Grizzlies were doing, that the Kings were going to be third. And there was an opportunity for the Kings to play straight against the Warriors and potentially beat them and knock them out of a scenario where the Kings would have faced him in the first round. Mike Brown chose not to do that, and they gave the Warriors one. And I think, you know, folks in the Bay Area were glad they did, because they wanted to avoid the play-in tournament. But the other part of it, from the Bay Area point of view, and I know it from talking to Warrior fans on the daily, they, like a lot of teams, wanted the Kings. But the part that I want to get into with you is what you mentioned about the Kings wanting the Warriors. Why in the hell would the Kings want the Warriors when you had the potential to control your own destiny to avoid it, even with all the ties?
Yeah, and it's funny, I should point out that a lot of those conversations were before they made that decision to sit out and help the Warriors, right? And just hearing so many of these guys, particularly people like De'Aaron Fox, man, and even like Harrison Barnes, these like longest tenured Kings, which is crazy to even think about, that Harrison Barnes, who has a tie to this dynasty, is now longer in the tooth with the Kings than he is with the Warriors. And to know what he means to this team and what De'Aaron Fox means to this team, it's like, no, they want to be the ones that if someone was going to have the opportunity to take down the Warriors, it would be them. And I think they also think of what's possible, you know, having a conversation with a couple of people, what lies in store for the Warriors offseason, like win or lose. Like, this could be a first round exit to the Kings could be, like, in their opinion, colossal, you know, to say, like, what do the Warriors do at that point? Like, you know, obviously the rumors of Bob Myers and his future is obviously up in the air. And is that does that signify the end of Klay Thompson, Stephen Curry and Draymond Green? What does that look like? Does that all of a sudden start to rupture? Can this be the moment that kind of punctures the air out of their sails? So I think just the moment and having this moment of, you know, the Kings being on the upswing under Mike Brown, snapping the drought and doing it against something that's so much more relevant than, oh, here's a Pelicans team that isn't any damn good. And if you beat them, are you really all that vindicated going forward to play a Memphis Grizzlies team, or, you know, the winner of that series, whatever, how that shakes out. So I think whether the Kings envision themselves in this for the long haul or the short term, going up against a team like the Warriors kind of is their NBA finals, if you will. Like, this will almost have more meaning if they could take out a team like this.
Well, it's interesting. We're talking with Sean Cunningham here of Fox 40 in Sacramento, Warriors weekly podcast, leading up to the Warriors and the Kings in the NBA playoffs in round one. I do think it's interesting from the Kings standpoint, and my view on it is sort of, well, it's an easy series to lose. If you win it, look out, right? Like you slayed the dragon, and obviously the Warriors have won 18 straight Western Conference playoff series going back over the last nine years. And so, yeah, if you're the one to do it, and it may very well signal the end of the dynasty. But I guess it is, in a way, an easy series to lose if you're the Kings. Great regular season. Wow. But you lost to the defending champs, and you know what? You saw firsthand what it's going to take if you want to raise yourself to that level. There are times where I've watched the Kings this year. I think I've said this to you off the air, where I've watched the Kings and thought, you know what? Their record's a little inflated. They're a little too all offense, but that plays in the regular season. They've had, I think, some good fortune in some close games. A lot of that's been De'Aaron Fox has been awesome at the end of close games, but there's also been some weird stuff that's happened at the end of some games that they've won close. But, like, you know what? This team was probably closer to maybe a 7 seed than actually a 3 seed. That's one version of it. I've also, at times, looked at them and the level of offense that they've played at and the connectivity and just how much they like each other as a group on the floor playing together, and thought, to be honest, it reminds me a little bit of the Warriors from 2013, say, before anybody knew what they were going to become. And it was just like, hey, this is a young up-and-coming team that's pretty good, a franchise that sucked for a long time. Hey, something's going on here that's a little bit different. Nobody thought it would be 10 years later, 4 championships and 6 finals and all that. But they had action at that point. Like, the Kings might have action, I guess, is what I'm getting at. But I kind of go back and forth on it when I've watched them a lot this year.
Yeah, and to that point, too, I'm surprised, too, that you didn't even mention that the Kings, the good fortune of going up against a lot of teams in the regular season that would rest some of their players or have injuries to their players. Look, Kings can't control that.
Well, I give them credit for that. I give that. That's actually, just not to cut you off, but the most admirable quality, I think, of this Kings team this season is the fact that in a league where it's become fashionable to sit out, and I know they're a young team, but they said, no, we're not doing that. Like, they've been healthy. Oh, yeah. They've played hard every night. They want to beat you every night. And that, to me, is probably the biggest secret, if there is a secret to their success, is that they have brought it every night in a league that doesn't. And when you're like, well, why were the Kings a 3 seed? Well, that's the answer to the question, I think. And they get credit for that. That's not a slight.
Yeah, and I agree. But also, like, there is good fortune going up against other teams that not only are resting players, but have faced injuries along the way. Again, the Kings can't control that. They just control what they control. They go out there and they treat that as if it's any, and then they take care of business, and they've been a better road team than they have been at home this year. And even defensively, like, over the top better on the road than they have been at home. And if for a team that doesn't play a lick of defense, as you know, but it's interesting about this series too, John, because, you know, you can dissect this any amount of ways. Obviously, you've got a team that, if you take Matthew Dellavedova off the roster, 133 games of playoff experience,
which you can, because he's not playing because he broke his hand, right?
Yeah, there's that line in Point Break. He's not coming back. Yeah, it's not happening. But 133 games of playoff experience. I think Steph Curry alone has more playoff games than experience in this run. But when you're talking about all that, like, to me, I don't care if the Kings were the top seed in the West. They obviously get third, and they want to show that that's validated. The pressure is completely on the Warriors, in my estimation. I would imagine you would agree with that. I think most people looking at this objectively would say, yeah, look, the Warriors didn't have the season that they set out to have as defending champs, but by virtue of what they've done in the postseason, have faced teams that are physical, teams that can go small, can go big. They faced anything you can throw at them. They know how to play against any style of team. And if they lose, like, the magnitude is bigger. Look, the Kings can go out tomorrow, come out in this series, and they can get swept, John. They could get swept in this series by the Warriors, and you'll still check that box. It was a successful season.
No, that's absolutely true. There's no doubt. I mean, and the Warriors, I think the key to them, though, over their run, is they have kind of seen it all, and they don't, at least to this point, and we'll see if this series is different as they get a little bit older, or maybe they're a little bit more vulnerable, but they typically don't show that they're feeling any kind of pressure. Now, part of that, as we start to dive a little bit more into the X's and O's of the series, part of that is the fact that typically they're up in a series in a game one. I was looking at the Warriors in 24 series or 21-3 in game one of the series. So they're, and a lot of that is they're just hands down the better team. I think this is one of the more interesting series that the Warriors have played in the last decade, because they're not going to have home court for just the fourth time in, what would that be, 25 series, I guess. And but they do tend to win game one and kick the pressure of winning the series to the opposition, you know, playing for, whether it's stealing game one on the road, which they've done two out of the three times that they haven't had home court advantage. They've won game one on the road and put that pressure on. I feel like, what's the biggest advantage the Warriors have in this series? It's experience, right? You were just talking about
100%,
the fact that they have 3-4 players that have more combined experience than the Kings do, like individual experience, and the Kings have combined. And I think that's the one thing the Warriors, they have in their back pocket, but they also can't play with, is the notion of the Warriors know that if they don't win game one or even game two, they could still win the series, right? Yeah. Like that's, you know, so to me, but like where the experience comes into play is it's game one. It's maybe the Kings are a little tight. The Warriors are unfazed because, oh, this is the first round. Like, we've been in game seven of the finals. Like, this is not pressure. Like we've lost game seven of the finals. We've won finals games in Boston and against LeBron and like all this Toronto.
3-1 deficits.
Yeah. Toronto was a zoo. Like they've been so game one. But the one thing I will say is this Warriors team this year has played a lot like they have this massive margin for error, and I think that's bitten them at times. So in some sense, the greatest strength of the Warriors is they have the experience and they can battle through things that maybe don't go well early, but they need to be careful to not rely on that, because the one thing that I do think is you lull a little bit against Sacramento and they have the ability to really hit you in the mouth with a run that just knocks you back, and that's the, like, if the Kings are going to be successful in this series, the Warriors, I think, are going to have to avoid that run. Like, and if the Kings are successful, they're going to have one of those runs, I think, in the first two games, where it's like, oh God, like the Kings just hit the Warriors with a 40-18. Like how did that happen?
Yeah, and to that point, I mean, there's no lead that's safe, right? You could have a 20-point lead either way, and I just don't think it's safe. We even saw that. I think the Warriors went up 20 against a dilapidated Kings team that sat everybody, and the Kings came right back into it, cut it to a single possession game. But to that point, though, like it's funny. We talk about pressure and expertise and experience in this postseason. The Kings, I think there's a little bit of freedom there. You know, if to your point. I agree with you. I think the Warriors are going to be just as confident stepping into game one in Sacramento, stepping into game three if they were 0-2 going back to San Francisco. What do the Kings do in that? Do they get a little overconfident? You know, how do they react to success or even a deficit in a series? The Warriors know what that's all about. The Kings have no idea what that's all about. And that, to me, is where the pressure comes in, because I do feel we've seen in recent years, the Hawks make big run into the Eastern Conference Finals. The Mavericks did it last year. We saw some of the success that the Memphis Grizzlies have had as teams that didn't really have that playoff success. The Kings could be next in line to maybe surprise some people and play with a little bit of freedom in that regard. And, you know, talking to coaches and people in that staff all throughout the season, they say, hey, you think we play fast now? There's another level that they'll get to in the playoffs. And I do believe that. The only problem is they're going up a team against a team that's more than capable to do that themselves, if not better, and also be able to do it on the defensive end. I mean, the Warriors defensively is something that still I appreciate, even though they're about 14th, middle of the road in terms of defensive ratings this season. But they can still, if there's any team that can flip a switch, it's that Warriors team, as you well know. And going back to just games this series, like in this season, they played three times. These two teams played three times in the first 12 games. I don't know what you can really take away from that.
Yeah,
the biggest thing that I take, yeah, probably nothing. But the biggest thing that I could take away is, to me, that Kings fans, I don't think, quite realize just when the Warriors make a mistake, for example, turnovers. You see this last game against Sacramento, And granted, the Kings didn't play anybody. But one thing that is pretty consistent is when the Warriors turn the hell out of the ball, the Kings aren't able to score on the other end. It's not like they're capitalizing off of some of those mistakes. That was something that I noticed earlier on, is the way that the Warriors are able to limit mistakes. Kings don't turn the ball over a lot, as we've seen throughout the year. But if they're not able to score off of turnovers, that kind of puts them at a little bit of a disadvantage.
Well, and I think you're right. It does, because the way I view it is, if the Kings are going to have success in this series, it's going to be bad shots and turnovers and lackadaisical defense by the Warriors. And the defensive splits, the Warriors have been basically a top five defensive team at home and a bottom five defensive team on the road. And then you add it up and they end up middle of the pack. I don't think home court advantage matters at all in this series. I know a lot is being made of the Warriors on the road. I think, you know, it's going to be split crowds in both buildings. One thing I've sort of said is I think there are going to be more Warrior fans at games one and two than Kings fans are comfortable with. I also think there might be more Kings fans in games three and four than Warrior fans are expecting. I just think the travel and the fact that it's the playoffs, like maybe in a future series, if the Warriors advance, the home road thing is more prevalent. I just don't think it's an issue in this series as much as it's being made, because the crowds are going to be mixed, and there's just such a familiarity, I think, between the systems that both these teams are going to want to run with the coaches and everything else.
Well, and let's face it, it's a playoff series. And they're down the road. They're going to be, for the lack of better term, sleeping in their bed after every night anyway. You know, they're not going to have to stay for prolonged stretches in Sacramento or the Bay.
And just like to that point, the Warriors have the streak that I know you're aware of, the 27 consecutive series. So every single series that Steph, Klay, and Draymond have played in their careers, every single playoff series where the three of them have been together, they've won at least one road playoff game. Every single one of them. Remarkable. Before Steve Crazy. Kerr, with Mark Jackson, up until now. And so, you know, do you believe more in that than you believe in the fact that the Warriors went 11-30 on the road this season? Like, I believe more in the fact that those three are going to win a game in Golden 1 Center. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if the Warriors win two games in Golden 1 Center and the Kings win one game at Chase Center. Like, the Kings being a good road team is something that I do think plays in this series, because the Warriors have had a propensity, Sean, to get down big. Like, they're either awful on the road or they play a close game that they can't win on the road. But at home, they have this tendency to get down 15 before they start playing. And to me, the Warriors have to avoid that. And the Kings are going to, like, I don't know. I feel like there's going to be a game where the Kings come out hot and it's like, oh, damn, the Kings are up 35-21 into the first quarter. Like, and to me, you do that against the Kings, if you're the Warriors, like they've done in so many home games, that's just death.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's like this every year. Like, the Kings and Warriors have always been just such an exciting matchup in the regular season and had some really classic games. And I think about that going into the series. And I really wonder, I feel like, look, those two first games, games one and two, yeah, I think it's going back 1-1. I really do. I really feel Sacramento will probably capitalize off of the really magical moment that is that first game at Golden 1 Center. Everyone's going to be unable to feel their face. It's going to be so loud. And Warriors are used to every bit of that type of environment. So I think they're going to steal one there. And I think that, you know, what happens in San Francisco? We know the Kings are a good road team. I think that the fact that this team can play without the pressure and they can go in there and, you know, let's face it, Sabonis is such a big, in my opinion, huge advantage for Sacramento. He makes everyone better. And really he's flourished against the Warriors at times this season. Granted, those were early games, but that's just something I feel like is going to remain consistent. I kind of wonder, do we have a different De'Aaron Fox? And I don't mean from a scoring standpoint. I mean, does he kick it up a notch? Is he more of a playmaker? Are they going to see a lot of three-guard lineups? How creative does Mike Brown get? Does he get too creative? There's only really two things that I'm for certain of in looking at this series. I think it's going to be the most entertaining first-round series of the entire playoffs. I think a lot of people would agree with that. And I think it's going to be a long one. I really do. I think this is going to go at least six. But if it goes seven, JD, I don't like the Kings' chances. I think the Warriors, that's where the you know, seeing the Kings in a game seven is just not something that I think Sacramento fans want to see, even though it would be played in Sacramento at Golden 1 Center. That's where that experience would really, really kick in. But I feel like if the Kings are going to capitalize in this series, they have to do it early on.
Yeah, game one and game seven to me are the two games where the experience matters the most. And also just the different pivot points of you get down 0-2 and you gotta win or a closeout. Because that's the thing about the Warriors are going to be a tough team to close out regardless. And I think where a team like the Kings could get a little tight is twofold. Early in, say, a game one, or if they get down 0-1, or in a game seven. But I think the other place where you get tight is when you, like, let's say they're up in a series and it's like, is this really going to happen? Like, are we really going to do this? And I think a team can get a little bit tight in that scenario as well. I want to get into the matchups as far as who's going to play and how these teams match up to kind of close this thing out. So let's do that here. Coming up, it's John Dickinson, our Warriors Weekly podcast, joined by Sean Cunningham of Fox 40 in Sacramento. All right, let's get into some of the matchups, Sean, as Warriors and the Kings. And look, the Kings they're built on Sabonis and Fox and a lot of shooters, and they know who their 8-9-man rotation is going to be. How do you view this? I think the Warriors are still struggling. Struggling is probably not the right word, but they're going to have to figure out.
You sit in traffic now, but later there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Here in the days leading up to the game, what their rotation is going to look like with Andrew Wiggins coming back. Does he start? Does he not start? The Warriors have had a lot of success with Dante DiVincenzo basically starting in Wiggins' spot. How does that impact who plays or doesn't play for the Warriors? But from the Kings' side of this thing, the one thing they have is continuity because they've been healthy and they know who their top eight is, plus, you know, a couple other guys that may or may not play depending upon the night or the matchup. Just how do you what do you think is the biggest individual matchup and maybe who's the biggest X factor, let's say, for the Kings in this series?
Yeah, I'll start with the second part of that question first in terms of X factor, because I think it's, you know, we're always looking at playoff series and sometimes it's a guy you least expect. I know Warriors fans have known what that's like. I mean, we know the importance of what, you know, guys like Andrew Wiggins and Otto Porter meant to last year's team and how that plays into this season with Andrew Wiggins coming back. Who knows? But for the Kings, every single night, I feel like, you know what you're going to get from Sabonis. You know what you're going to get from De'Aaron Fox. To me, where this team is at their best is when Malik Monk is on. And it's not even means that doesn't, in my opinion, mean he has to go out and score a bunch of buckets, 20 points, whatever it is. It's him as a playmaker and him not turning the ball over and being a kind of a capable defender at times, especially in transition. He gives them this attitude, this swagger, if you will. And the team is just, it's just infectious, man. Like when he's on, they look like world beaters. When he's not, they can still win, but it's just clunkier and it doesn't feel as fluid, if you will. So to me, that X factor, I still think is Malik Monk for the success of this team, because I think you can already jot down what Domantas Sabonis looks like in this series, what De'Aaron Fox looks like in this series, from at least from an offensive standpoint. To me, I think it really comes down to Malik Monk. I do feel playoffs look the better part of the past 2-3 weeks. Mike Brown has reintroduced Alex Len to the lineup again. You're seeing guys like PJ Dozier. Let's just fast forward to this playoff series. You're probably not going to see those guys play.
No, I think
it will
not.
Be a tightening of the rotation. I think one guy who could be a factor, if you will, and maybe it's not in game one, but it certainly will play a part in one of these games, is somebody like Kessler Edwards, who they picked up at the trade right before the trade deadline from Brooklyn. And a guy who has some length, has some versatility, and can play a defensive role. All these moves are so defensive oriented for a team that just doesn't play a lick of defense. So how does that, you know, look going forward? But also, John, and you've seen it with this Kings team, I know the Warriors aren't the most physical team out there, but the Kings really don't respond well to physicality. And I'm expecting the Kings to kind of, for lack of a term, kind of grow a pair in this series. Like they have to play the big boy game and really have a sense of physicality and at least not wilt when they're punched in the mouth. Oftentimes we've seen in this series, the Kings come out and kind of punch first, and they have a little bit of a toughness about them, but admittedly and jokingly, De'Aaron Fox refers to his team as a finesse team often. And knowing just how the Warriors can play a rugged team, a team that plays with that edge, or even a finesse team, they're ready for any kind of game. That's the game plan, at least from a Kings standpoint. But I think they're better suited to come out and have a little bit of edge to them. It's not something that might be the most authentic, but it's something I feel like they really have to kind of capitalize off. And a guy like Trey Lyles has kind of shown the ability to do that. And I'm not even taking the fight that he had, or, you know, towards the end of the season, a little altercation that he had. I mean, we're really talking about just toughness in the lane, toughness dealing with bigger players and length. Length is what really hurts the Kings, and you're going up against a Warriors team that typically plays a little bit smaller. So how does that factor into this series? Does that change at all? Will kind of remain to be seen.
Well, I wonder if the Kings get a little out of character in terms of trying to be chippier, let's say, because the Warriors can, and usually it's led by Draymond. They do play differently in the playoffs, as most teams do, but they do play edgier in the playoffs. And the one thing that the Warriors have, I think, reveled in is when teams try to get a little bit out of character, just based on the fact that they're going up against them specifically. Like that's something that they've really been able, I think, to use to their advantage, whether it's, you know, going back at somebody or some of the talk that's going to go on, you know, in between games of the series. I think the officiating is something that has the potential to be interesting, and you know, where maybe both ways it's not like Warrior fans, as most fans do, really do think they don't get a beneficial whistle. I think a lot of that in the regular season is the fact that they really are a jump shooting team, and they don't attack in the paint, but they have shown a propensity to attack in the paint a lot more in the playoffs. And there have been a lot of games where they do get the championship whistle in not in every game in a series, but they've had it a lot in different games. But the only way you get that is if you play buttoned up, which to me comes down to, are you taking good shots? Like, that's the one area where this thing goes awry for me, I think, from the Warriors standpoint, is if you're taking the bad shots and you're not hitting them, and the Kings are able to get out and run on you and get in transition and score easily, and your defense isn't set when it already is going to probably struggle to keep the Kings under 120, because the Kings on a bad night get 120 usually.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's interesting. I find it fascinating about the you know, maybe the Kings thinking they have to play with a little bit more of a chip on your shoulder. I want to go back to Malik Monk, because, and you were talking about Malik Monk, and I was thinking about Jordan Poole, because in many ways, and I know Monk does play with more of an attitude, I think, or more of an angst, but they both play with a swag when they're on. And
yeah.
And when they're not on, it's like some of the just worst plays you've ever seen on the basketball court that not only don't help you, but they really hurt you. Those two, I do think, are big X factors kind of both ways, because I think the Warriors know Steph and Klay are going to be out there. Draymond's going to be out there. They're going to start Looney against Sabonis. Wiggins, we'll see. I don't know. To me, whether Wiggins starts or not is going to be determined by how the week goes and how many minutes he can play. Like, I could see the Warriors saying, we're going to keep rolling with DiVincenzo because this team's 1-8 out of 10 with DiVincenzo basically in there as the starter, and Wiggins can't play as many minutes. So Wiggins is going to be maybe the first or the second sub in, and that's how they manage the minutes as far as that goes. But I think it's going to be interesting because the Kings know they're 8. The Warriors are trying to figure out, I think, how to use their 8. Or and maybe 9, because Wiggins is going to impact DiVincenzo some, who's played well when he started, and it's going to affect Kuminga, I think, some, who almost has to play a lot to be effective. Yeah, he's had a lot of trouble. Oh, you're only getting 10 to 15 minutes tonight. Well, a lot of those games, he's just not effective. If he's going to play 25, then he is effective. So I think, you know, the fact that the Kings know who they are and want to be, versus the Warriors, who maybe they come out and they got it buttoned up. They did last year in game one and against Denver, and they were on a roll and they took control of that series, and it was a wrap quick. The order, I guess, of the 8 is more maybe sound, at least at the beginning, for the Kings. But yeah, Poole's the one guy among the 8 or the 9 where he's going to be in there, but you to call him fully playoff trustable is maybe a little bit of a stretch given the up and down season that he's had.
Yeah, and this will be, you know, to Monk, the point of Monk, it's his first playoff experience. You know, at least I think Jordan Poole can, you know, hang his hat on what happened last year. And yeah, it wasn't all roses, but
he helped them win a lot of games.
He did. He absolutely did. He experienced both the highs and the lows and was able to do that within the quest for the championship there. And I feel like it's funny because you talk about him, it's like, well, who do you trust more among the two? I don't know that I have an answer for that. Maybe I would lean on the veteran that is Malik Monk, but by virtue of Jordan Poole being there and him being surrounded just by the most even temperament type of team and such a great coach like Steve Kerr, I feel like I'd almost – it's really a pick'em at that point. I don't know which one I would pick.
When you look at – like how are the Kings going to try to defend what the Warriors do offensively? Like how are they going to
– I think you're – yeah. Well, there's no stopping Stephen Curry, even if you do have Davion Mitchell trying to pick him up full court, which I think will be a fun matchup. I mean, Davion Mitchell's a guy who is known for his defense, and he's obviously the straw that stirs the drink on defensively coming out of Baylor, winning a national championship. So he has some pedigree there, but it, you know, going up against Steph Curry is a whole nother nightmare. And I think you're going to see a lot of Kings with the three guard lineup. I don't know that for sure. But I really do.
So who's out in that? Who's out in that instance? Is it Keegan Murray that's not playing and Mitchell's playing? So Mitchell, Fox, Herter?
Yeah, I think Monk. It probably Herter, and I think Monk as well. I think Herter and Monk will probably be the ones that kind of sub out the three. And look, they're always going to have Fox or Sabonis on the floor at all times. That's kind of a by design there. I'm glad you mentioned Keegan Murray. He's a rookie, and you just can't trust rookies in the postseason. But Keegan is one of those rookies that, for all intents and purposes, he's not somebody who's going to be this guy who's going to be your number one scorer, but he's a threat beyond the arc, especially from the corner three. And he plays with such composure. And I think that's been the best trait that he's had in this rookie season, that anyone thinking that he's just going to wet the bed, it could happen, but it seems less likely based off the role he plays. He is a starter on this team, but you're talking about a stretch four, really, who is in the corner a lot. Defensively, he's a mess, and that's what teams tend to absolutely go at. And it's like, you can look at Sabonis, and he obviously fits a team defensive philosophy, not a great individual defender. But that's also where, you know, I mentioned someone like Kessler Edwards. You might see a guy like Terrence Davis, who's a nice on-ball defender. It's in the team defense where he gets a little bit lost. He's a guy that might be able to come in and help that defensive coordinating kind of that Jordy Fernandez on this team likes to diagram, but I don't think it's going to be something you can rely on from in each single game. I think he's an adjustment player that will come in. Maybe you see him in a game two, game four, maybe one of those every other game type of things.
Yeah, I think the fewer offensive players the Kings put on the floor against the Warriors, I think the Warriors relish that. I really do. Yeah, I think the Warriors relish that because they feel they're getting locked in defensively because it's the playoffs, because they have Gary Payton the second, because they're going to have Wiggins, who's their best, at least among the starters, on ball defenders. To me, the more off where the Kings really can hurt the Warriors in this series is the Warriors have a tendency, because they've been so bad point of attack defensively, that they overhelp and the ball gets kicked to shooters and shooters are wide open and teams have just annihilated them in road games. It seems like they miss the open ones at Chase Center, but they make the open ones at a really high clip in their building. But it's the help off of a guy like Keegan Murray and he hits a couple of threes on you, or you help off a guy like Harrison Barnes, who I do think the Warriors probably will you know, the Harrison Barnes, you know, the Warriors remember Harrison Barnes, and I know Harrison Barnes remembers the 16 finals and the 5 of 32 and the final three games of the finals, and those were the last three playoff games that Harrison Barnes played in, going back to the end of that Cleveland series. But I think there is an interesting dichotomy between what's made the Kings successful is their offense, but still needing to defend the Warriors, who themselves are a pretty damn good offensive team. And if they have to overcompensate by taking some of their offensive players off the floor, does that make them more susceptible to being slowed down a little bit by the Warriors, who now have Payton and Wiggins and even Kuminga, who I think is somebody that could be thrown on ball a little bit, both on Fox and even potentially, believe it or not, on Sabonis here and there.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point there, especially with Domas, because, you know, Sabonis has had a lot of games in the recent month or so where he's in foul trouble, and it's a disruption of the flow of their offense because he touches so many people, he makes so many people better on that team. He is, to me, I mean, it's a debate among Kings fans, but Domantas Sabonis, make no mistake, is the best player on this Kings team.
Absolutely.
He made De'Aaron Fox better. De'Aaron Fox is better as a result of Domas. And to me, that's the one matchup. Like, you're looking at all the matchups throughout the, you know, you can go, I know Monty Poole did it recently for NBC Sports Bay Area, but if you go position by position, Domas is the one, and I would disagree with Monty because he gave a push, but basically taking away what Domas doesn't give you defensively and saying, hey, Looney and Draymond Green offer enough defensively to where it's almost as elite as what Domas does offensively. And I would disagree.
Well,
I would.
No, I'll finish that. Yeah.
just to the point of just Domas being so elite on offensive end and what he means to all his teammates that, yeah, you may take him away from a scoring standpoint. And I don't necessarily think you will. I think the numbers kind of bear that out. He's had pretty tremendous games in those three games he played against Golden State. And you just go back in history and when he was back in Indiana in recent years. But I feel like that's the matchup that the Kings have the biggest advantage of. Everywhere else, I'd probably agree with Monty and give the edge to the Warriors, particularly when it comes to even coaching in this regard. So I feel like the Kings, who have such an offensive team, the Warriors just have a little bit more balance, but it's that really scary, historically great offense that the Kings are showing this year from a numbers standpoint that do bear out and is just incredibly weird to say, because no one's going to say that this, well, maybe not no one, but no one's going to say that this Kings team has a better offense than what the Warriors have shown when they had Kevin Durant in years past. So it's just that the numbers.
Well, somebody did say that in this season. Somebody did say that.
I would disagree. I would definitely disagree.
I think you do a different podcast with the guy that said that on our station. Of all things, James Hamm, of course, and we can mention his name. Good guy. We at least mention his freaking name if we're going to be giving him a hard time. But no, as far as to me, Sabonis is getting his numbers. But what the Warriors have shown is, and I think this is to bring it back to there's two things on Sabonis and Fox that I think are interesting. And, you know, the overhelping and leaving 3-point shooters and letting guys like Herter and Monk and Murray and even Harrison Barnes, like those extra threes when the Kings are rolling that they hit in a lot of these games, the Warriors are going to have to take some of that away. I think Sabonis and Fox, for the most part, are going to get theirs in terms of numbers. Where the Warriors have had a knack in the playoffs, though, over the years, is not preventing numbers, but preventing the impact of those numbers. So we may look up at the end of the night in a game where the Warriors win, and you're like, damn, Sabonis had 20 and 16 and 11. But he was 7 of 17, and he got to the free throw line a couple of times, missed a couple of free throws, and you know he got his, but it wasn't particularly efficient. And somebody's got to score, right? He is their best player. I agree with you, but was it done in an efficient manner or in the flow of every? You know, he was also kicking it out to wide open 3-point shooters that were knocking down 3-point shots. I think as far as Fox goes, and the Warriors are going to put Wiggins on Fox. They're going to put DiVincenzo on Fox. They're going to put Payton on Fox. They may even put Kuminga on Fox. They switch everything when they're rolling defensively. So there's going to be a lot of Looney is going to have to come out on some of the dribble handoff stuff. If Sabonis is giving it back to him, Looney is going to have Draymond. If he's going to be on Sabonis, is going to have to. So the Kings are going to see the kitchen sink on Fox. But the other thing that they've done with guards, and the Kings have sort of tricked the system, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but they've tricked the system in the sense that for three quarters, they basically run everything through Sabonis. And they it's almost like the Warriors' open offense where it's ball movement and player movement, and it's you know everybody's involved, and Fox is still involved, but in the fourth quarter, they just turn it over to Fox.
It's completely by design. And at that point, Sabonis becomes more of a cleaner upper,
offensive rebounder.
100%. And those putbacks, and like we've seen moments when Monk is out on the floor with Fox, and Fox sometimes diverts to him a little bit and kind of tries to look. Domantas Sabonis and Malik Monk have the best two-man game on the Kings. You see the little dribble handoff. They do so much dribble handoff, and I think they execute it about as good as anybody on the team. When Monk is on the floor with Fox, that's the moment where he will try to get others involved. If Monk is off the floor and Sabonis is still there, he's running and he's going right to his spot, and he gets to a spot every single time, free throw extended. It's a little jumper, it's a little floater in the lane. I mean, he's fourth quarter Fox. He's the reason why he's going to probably win that Jerry West Clutch Player of the War, the Clutch Player of the Year award. And that's not to say that they go completely away from Sabonis. He just ends up playing a little bit differently. It's not a lot of high dribble handoff or high post. It's literally Fox getting to his spots, and they encourage it. So I want to see how much that they deviate, if at all, from that, because we've talked about how you're look taking scoring off the table. Fox, like you said, going to get his 25, 30 points, whatever it is. That's where the bread is buttered. Does he become more of a distributor at all in this series? Does he keep, he's always criticized for not keeping his foot on the pedal. That can mean speed. That can be his, the switch he tries to flip in the fourth quarter where all of a sudden defense becomes at premium and he focuses more on that area. I think he has to come in here as the most aggressive player on the court from the start of the whistle, and he doesn't always do it. So are we going to see, we don't know what postseason De'Aaron Fox looks like.
No, it's true.
And I'm kind of wondering, do we see a different De'Aaron Fox?
And this is the wild card that I'm going to give you from the Warriors' point of view. What they've done with a lot of guards is they basically force the guard. They want them to shoot a lot. They've done this with Harden. Mm-hmm. They've done this with Westbrook over the years, and you know, Fox is a different kind of a player. They did it with John Morant last year, is use that mentality of I'm on the big stage, I got to be the man or do more against them, and that you're going to get your numbers, but you're going to get your numbers at the expense of everybody else getting involved. And that's the one little piece of bait. I think there's ways where I think the Kings can bait the Warriors into a lesser version of themselves by taking bad shots and getting a little bit careless with the ball, which I think lessens the defense and adds, you know, Klay shot hunts every first quarter. It's like he's taking 10 shots. If he makes five of them, the Warriors are in the game. If he's not making them on that night, it might be trouble. But I think the Warriors are going to look to bait Fox into trying to be the man a little bit. And if his numbers are 35, but that prevents some open threes from Harrison Barnes or Keegan Murray or Herter, then so be it. And just to kind of throw them off a little bit, what they typically like to do, which is make sure everybody is involved in the game, to where if the ball finds anybody's hands down the stretch, yeah, Fox will go for 12 in the fourth, but when they've needed big shots from others, those players have been warm enough to hit those shots. I think the Warriors are going to try to take that away and trust that they can get the one or two misses that they need to from Fox as long as they're doing what they have to do on the other end.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. And that's one of the things that if I'm Mike Brown, who obviously is a big tool in your tool belt when you go up against this Warriors team, something that he has a lot of familiarity with, obviously. But I feel like that kind of bodes well for Sacramento. We've seen so often in this season where, you know, you got Domas, you got Fox, they're going to get theirs, but it's always somebody different. Like one night it could be Kevin Herter. Next night it could be Keegan Murray. The next night it's Malik Monk. Even if Domas or Fox have just an off night, which hasn't been that often, but it's always somebody else. It's not like, here's your big three. Your big three have to contribute. It's like, here's your big two. One of your big two makes everybody better. And then your third person, one night it's Harrison Barnes, one night it's Kevin Herter, one night it's Malik Monk. All these guys are capable of having 20-point outings, and it happens with rather, you know, consistent efforts. And it's funny because somebody like Harrison Barnes, who is one of really two or three guys that can really get to the free throw line, outside of that, they don't really have a lot of guys that get to the free throw line with any sort of consistency. So if I'm the Warriors, I'm looking at HB and saying, you cannot put him at the free throw line, because that's where, if that's happening and he's getting to the line and he's shooting probably 8 or 9 free throws a game, that's not going to bode well for the Warriors.
No, and where the Warriors have been at their worst has been when they foul also. I mean, that's another good thing to bring up. Defensively, they can be a little bit of a tick slow, and they foul. They put teams on the free throw line, which also stops the game. It allows the opposition to set their defense. That I think is going to be a key in this one. Anything we didn't get to here, Sean? We went well longer than I thought we were going to go here, but we can wrap it up. Is there anything we missed?
I think we didn't talk about the equipment managers, the broadcasters, our good friend, you know, our good friend Tim Roy, who got his start in the Kings organization and in Sacramento. And now there's a lot of cool storylines. I'm just so happy because I have so many friends that are Kings and Warriors fans, and they're just at each other's necks all the time. And now they really get to do it for something that matters. And, you know, I'm really looking forward to what Golden One Center looks like on Saturday. It's going to be fun to see you there. And a lot of, you know, it's for people who don't know, when the Kings Warriors historically end, ends, I jump on the Warriors train and go as far as that goes. So, you know, the Warriors are the team I'm a little bit more familiar with than any other team outside of the Kings. And having a lot of relationships with people within that organization is going to be a lot of fun. And I'm with you, man. I feel like there's going to be an influx of Warrior fans at maybe not game one per se, because I think that means so much to Sacramento that game two might have a little bit more Warrior fans. But certainly I think there's going to be a ton of Kings fans down in San Francisco at Chase Center, because of the fact that, hey, it's the first round and Warrior fans are kind of used to going a little bit deeper in the playoffs, and first round playoff matchups don't really mean that hell of a lot to a whole lot of Warrior fans. And this year, after when you get, you know, spoiled by what a dynasty looks like, you know, that's going to mean a little bit more to some of these Kings fans. And if those tickets are a little bit more cheaper, if I'm a Kings fan, I'm looking at that and circling, oh, games three and four, let's go do it.
Yeah. And they have been, I know the reports have been, you know, twice as much basically at Golden One in Sacramento than you compared to San Francisco. So I do think that's going to be, you know, fascinating. I'm not going to ask you to give a prediction because we are still three and a half days away, I guess. We're going to post this thing on Tuesday night, but I guess to kind of wrap it on that note, though, you know, what is the sense of the Kings fan base as far as, and we kind of started out in the, hey, the players for the Kings and the organization for the Kings wanted to play the Warriors, wanted to play the right defending champ. You know, hey, that's the litmus test of, hey, if you can beat them, you can beat anybody. It bodes well for the future of what the Kings are thinking that they have built here over the course of this year. How about the fans? Because I'll just give you my quick read on as everything was playing out Sunday, and the Warriors were up a million at the end of the first quarter. So it was basically, okay, are the Warriors going to go to Phoenix or the Warriors going to go to Sacramento? We kind of knew that from the Bay Area standpoint, and it depended on the Clippers and what were the Pelicans doing. And the Clippers were down most of the game. The Pelicans were up most of the game. So the Clippers had to keep trying and all of the different scenarios. But it's interesting because I had it sort of bookmarked as this in my mind, looking at the four Kings options. The Pelicans without Zion, to me, were that was the series where I go, oh, the Kings are probably going to win that series. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Kings against the Warriors, that's a lean Warriors for me. I think it's going to be closer than maybe some of the national media and maybe even some of the Bay Area media think. Like, I do think this is a 6 or 7 game series. I really do, because the Warriors still have things they need to figure out kind of as they go, which helps the Kings. Not an official prediction yet. I thought the Clippers series was one where I would have leaned Kings, even though a lot of people would have thought the Clippers were the team that, hey, they were, I think, stupid enough to think, hey, we want the Kings, we'll manipulate into that and then get beat. So I had Kings over Pelicans. I had lean Warriors over Kings. I had lean Kings over Clippers. And I didn't think the Lakers, I know the Kings didn't play the Lakers with their new team. I think that was in some ways the worst matchup for the Kings. Yeah. With the Warriors being a close second. And so that's the one where I think I outright would say, hey, the Warriors, or the Kings probably lose that series. So it was almost four different degrees. What's your sense for, like, the Kings fan? Like, did they want the Pelicans where there weren't going to be any Pelicans? You know, where that team has no fans and they weren't going to be at Golden One and Zion probably wasn't going to play, so you're probably going to win that series. Like, did they want that over some of these other options?
I don't think Kings fans, from my experience, people I've talked to, nobody wanted the Warriors. I mean, this was the worst case scenario.
So for fans did not want the Warriors.
They did not. No, the players, look, players are different than fans, obviously. I think media was kind of hoping it would be the Warriors because it's just never happened. And what a cool story this is. And it adds so much more spice to the series than if it is a Kings Pelicans. Like, no one gives a damn about Kings Pelicans. Like, however that shapes out, you know, could be an entertaining series, but no one was really looking forward to it. But I think fans were looking at just what is the easiest pathway for success for the Kings and getting into the next round. So certainly fans will think differently than what the players will think. And, you know, I tend to, and when you're breaking it down that way, I tend to agree with you. I am leaning Warriors, especially if it goes to 7 games, which I kind of think it might. And to be honest, Clippers was a little bit of a head scratcher. Does Paul George play? What happens there? You've got some experience, but I didn't believe in the Clippers because I started out thinking that the Clippers team, and I should have been, shame on me. The Clippers are never right. Like they're right for like a span of 2 or 3 weeks, and then they go into identity crisis. Like they're just never the same, but it was boding well that Kawhi Leonard was starting to play in back-to-back games, but I still think I put the edge to Sacramento over the LA Clippers. You know, the Minnesota Timberwolves, funny enough, is a team that if I was the Kings, I'd want nothing to do with. And it falls in line with that theory about the Lakers, which is they've got tremendous size and the Kings don't match up well against size. So, yeah, I think fans absolutely wanted the Pelicans. I think the Kings would have beat the Pelicans. I think the Kings would probably beat the Clippers. I think the Lakers and the T-Wolves are the ones that give me a little bit of pause. And seeing what just happened with the T-Wolves of Rudy Gobert trying to go at Kyle Anderson and then Jaden McDaniels just absolutely socking the wall and fracturing his hand. Boy, like, what is that? They good for them. They deserve that. They deserve a moment like that and then go into the play-in tournament. Maybe they don't exit. But, yeah, I think there were some Kings fans that wanted the Lakers just because of the mystique and the whole storylines from yesteryear, which I think is a bunch of garbage. But I don't think it would have played well if the Kings had played the Lakers.
All right, well, it's going to be a great series. Sean, I appreciate you for taking some time. I know we were going to keep it at about 30 minutes. We ended up going closer to 50. So thank you for the extended time. And, who knows? We may do this again here at some point over the next couple of weeks because, as you know, these series, they tend to roll on. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun here with the two fan bases and everything going on surrounding it. So thank you very much for joining me, Sean.
Absolutely. Good to see you and can't wait to see what lies ahead. Anytime you need me, I'm here for you.
All right. John Dickinson, our Warriors Weekly podcast for 95.7 The Game.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.